Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and this is another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman is not here. I think he's on assignment. Or I don't know where he is. And I use that as an excuse. That's what they always say, right, Simon?
He's on a night out, isn't he? Didn't he say?
I don't know. Yeah, I think so. Like, it's his regularly schedule. Yeah, it's the last Thursday of the month, he said. And he always goes out.
I think he's doing line. I think he's been taking a line dancing course for the last year.
Nice.
Yeah, I think that's what he does on the Thursday night, is he goes line dancing with the Christian Brothers of North Florida Association.
Yeah, perfect fit for Chris Kaufman, I mean, right? Just the perfect fit.
Like strawberries and cream, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Milk and coffee.
Yeah, I mean, brothers and sisters, which apparently they're also into.
Yes.
Not Chris, but the Christian Society of North Florida.
Absolutely. Yeah. This show, as always, is brought to you by Prize Picks. Use promo code 5, F-I-V-E, if you're not in Florida, because they have a little tiff going with the Hard Rock people. So if you're not in the state of Florida, you can still become a member of Prize Picks. Use the promo code 5. You deposit $100. You get $100. BetterEdge.com. They are, however, in Florida. They can't get rid of them, okay, because it's peer-to-peer, so you can't get rid of them. BetterEdge.com/5 reasons. You deposit, and you get $20 just for signing up. Our Discord, of course, discord.gg/OnlyFans. We got a lot of Combine content in there. And the next week, we're going to seamlessly move on to free agency, as the Dolphins have a lot of work to do. By the way, let's just start here very briefly. I don't think we want to spend 15 minutes talking about the Miami Dolphins cafeteria. But the NFLPA survey, I don't know if you saw that, Simon. I'm pretty sure you did. I think we posted it on OnlyFans.
Yeah.
Dolphins, A's across the board, including Stephen Ross, an A+. Like, that shouldn't net us some good vets on one-year deals, no?
I saw Chris went a little bit postal about people saying, yeah, that's all well and good, but why can't we just win games? Which, is a fair comment, frankly. But these things really matter when it comes to free agents and it comes to those sorts of things, you know. The Minnesota Vikings recently moved out of their old beloved facility into a new building that had been used by Northwest Airlines in the part of Minnesota until Northwest got sold to Delta. And essentially they said that the old facility, whilst it was great, just was a detriment to attracting free agents because it was cramped and the locker rooms were cramped and there was no, you know, whereas the Dolphins facility and what they're trying to build with the culture that Tom Garfinkel and Stephen Ross have been building is, that's just another reason why, you know, you've got Mike McDaniel, you've got the weather, you've got the tax situation. But, you know, if you go there and, you know, the food is good and it's free, some teams, you know, make their players pay for things. There's a slide, there's just those facilities that just, you know, you want players to relax and feel comfortable and feel at home and be at the facility and be around each other. And those things are important. And, you know, they can be the difference between a free agent taking a little bit less money, but thinking, you know what, that the environment and the culture here is what I want to be around. And yeah, I'm going to make, you know, $500,000 less over the course of 3 years, but, you know, the food's free. I know that was a facetious last comment, but the fact of the matter is that it is important. It's important.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Pro Football Talk. Mike Florio did a takedown of Clark Hunt and the Chiefs. They were 31st. Most of the complaints came at the expense of their owner, because Clark Hunt is notoriously cheap, as he built a 6,000 square foot home in Arrowhead Stadium. So he watches the games from a 3-bedroom, 6-bath home at Arrowhead Stadium. Okay. He spent, I think the number is $500 million in the suites at Arrowhead Stadium. And they're still in the same facility that opened in 1976.
Have you seen his wife?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
he could do no wrong, frankly. What a rocket.
Yeah. Clark Hunt just better hope that they never turn the financial system in football to the one that we have in baseball. Okay.
What do you think she found attractive in the multi-millionaire Clark Hunt?
Well, I researched this because I didn't want to go off, you know, half cocked. He's worth $15 billion.
Son. Oh, nice.
Okay. So he's slightly ahead of Stephen Ross. Okay. So he's extremely rich.
What's Stephen Ross worth?
11. So, yeah, Stephen Ross is not, you know, he's no slouch. I think he's the third richest owner.
Imagine having $11 million.
Well, $11 million, you know, I can imagine that. I'm talking about $11
billion. $11 billion, sorry. Imagine
I can't imagine it. Dollars. No, I can't imagine.
Crazy.
Yeah. But I can vouch for the Dolphins facilities. It's absolutely fabulous. You haven't been there yet, right, Simon?
No, I haven't, no.
Okay. The only thing that's going to be a culture shock is that everything is absolutely beautiful, except the press workroom. It resembles like the waiting room of a maximum security prison.
Excellent.
Okay. Not that I'm complaining, and Nolan. All right, just in case you're listening.
The press box at the stadium isn't amazing, is it?
Nah, it's all right. It's okay.
So it's fine, but it's...
Yeah, it's run of the mill. You know, it's nothing special. You know? But that facility, Jesus Christ. These players have it almost too good, man.
Yeah.
That place is absolutely beautiful. As far as a football facility, it's absolutely beautiful. And I've been at every part of it, by the way. And that weight room is insane. The practice fields are immaculate. It's just a great facility. And yes, the food is awesome. They give you two options for the press every single day in camp. And I'm telling you, one day they had brisket. I'm like, these people are trying to poison us today selling brisket. I mean, giving us brisket, right? I actually tried it. I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, this place is really, really good. Like, this is restaurant quality. And sure enough, the family is always there. They're, you know, they're in the cafeteria. They're having lunch while the players are practicing. It's a great, you know, it's just a great atmosphere. It's a great facility. It's a great organization. Now win some playoff games, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Chris Greer spoke to the media, and I think I'm fluent in Chris Greer because he made a lot of things clear, okay, during this availability, except one thing, which was I thought was, and I think we can lay to bed right now. He said, oh, I haven't closed the door on Xavier Howard coming back. I'm closing the door, okay? I think he's signing Stephon Gilmore's deal from 2 years ago. I say 2 years, $20 million, and he's probably a Dallas Cowboy or a Houston Texan. So I think we could close the door on Xavier Howard returning. You agree?
Yeah, I don't think he's coming back. I don't think he's coming back. Just watching Edrin Cooper on a 452.
Nice. Yes. Yeah. I got that on the background. I'm spying it with one eye. And we will talk about that in the second half.
He's not coming back.
But there were some changes here. First of all, extremely optimistic on Andrew Van Ginkel. That seems like almost a foregone conclusion, almost the way he was talking about it. Andrew Rosenhaus.
They can't afford to let him go because of the injuries to everybody else.
Yeah, he's important. But he was also oddly optimistic on Christian Wilkins, but extremely pessimistic on Robert Hunt. And if you believe what certain analysts are saying, and the PFF guys, you know, whatever you think about PFF is pretty good about spotting value or what the contracts will go for. They got him pegged at 17 million APY. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Like at that point, you just say, well, you know, Rob, it was nice having you around, but I can't see myself. I can't see. I don't see how it's responsible paying for any guard, even if he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, paying him $17 million a year. So,
yeah, I just worry about what's going to happen, though. How's the gap being filled? You know, how's the, because that is worrisome. You know, what are they putting in there? Who are they? Yeah, who are they getting in? That would frighten me in terms of, you know, trying to protect the quarterback.
But that's how you read Chris Greer's comments, right, on Robert Hunt?
It yeah, seemed, absolutely. Hunt's gone, mate.
Yeah, like he sounded completely defeated. Like he sounded like he was already out the door.
Yeah, I thought when they signed Jackson, that was the death knell for Hunt.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, do you think that Kevin Dotson is going to be like his rabbit? Whatever Kevin Dotson gets, Robert Hunt, whoever was the bidder or the loser on the Kevin Dotson sweepstakes, is just swooping in with their money and just handing it over to Hunt, which means yeah, he's probably going to get every dime he wants.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I mean, I think Hunt, you know, he's not been to the Pro Bowl, but he's a high caliber player who can play multiple positions. You know, he'll get an excellent deal. He'll be a very rich man, but I don't think he'll be in Miami. And you know, that's got to be a concern for, you know, excuse me, for an offensive line that consistently hasn't been good enough, and now we're losing a really important piece. That would be foolish, I suppose. And we only have, you know, two picks in the first five round in the first four rounds of the draft, yeah, and we are in a cap situation. Yeah, I mean, you know, I saw Barry Jackson today talking about Isaiah Wynn and him coming back to the working out the facility and those sorts of things, and you just think, you know, really, are we going to go into the season with Teron Armstead, Isaiah Wynn, and a new right guard and Austin Jackson? And you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they re-signed Connor Williams, and I'm a big Connor Williams fan, but you know, he'll be coming off an ACL. I don't know. I despair. And you know, you do go back to those comments that Chris Greer made last year when he laughed at the press and said, you know, you guys worry about the offensive line a lot more than I do. Well, you know, this is, I don't know. I'd love to speak to Chris Greer and just say to him, what is the disconnect here? Because your offensive line isn't very good, Chris, and it historically hasn't been very good. And I don't really understand what you think you're doing, especially when you're trying to protect your quarterback. And you know that down the stretch, protection issues were massive. Yeah, beggar's belief.
Yeah, Greer also revealed that he had communication with Robert Hunt on an extension during the season, which he's essentially telling you he turned down our offer and we handed his money to Austin Jackson. Like that's what essentially he's saying. Now, moving on to more Greer speak, Teron Armstead, not that he was optimistic, but he seemed to be like, oh, you know, he hasn't told us anything. Although Teron Armstead keeps telling everybody, I'm coming back. Trust me when I tell you. And then Mike McDaniel gets on with Florio and he says, no, take your time, Teron. Like, are they trying to ease him out the door and trying to save some more money come June?
I think they'd like to. Sorry, Dallas Turner's just running. Ooh, 4:47.
Nice.
That's a good time. I think they'd like Armstead off the books. And I think if he retires, you know, that's going to be a significant win for them. But yeah, I just, again, but it's all well and good us saying, yeah, Armstead needs to go, but who's the replacement?
Yeah.
Who's the day one replacement? You know, because they're out of reach probably of, you know, the guys that certainly the left tackles, Alt for Shanu, okay? They're out of reach of the guys that are right tackles but could play left tackle, definitely Latham, probably Guyton. They're probably out of reach of all of those guys, and Fuaga. And that throws up two players, which are Fautanu and Jordan Morgan. Now, Morgan's got really short arms, and lots of people saying he's going to kick inside to guard. And Fautanu, might be better suited as a left guard. So who's playing left tackle? You know, and they're about to, you know, there's all this talk of them making this crazy deal with for Tua to make him the most expensive player in the league, which they would just be the laughing stock of the league if this happened. I'm all for paying the guy, but if you pay him in the same bracket that that Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert have paid, no matter how high the, it's not about how high the salary cap has gone, it's about paying him for his worth. You know, and you have to factor everything into it. Late season collapses, not beating big teams, injuries. Yes, he's been excellent for the large part of two seasons, but the critical mass, he's not been good enough. If they pay him the same money or more than Burrow and or Herbert, they are idiots. But quite apart from that, they're about to pay him a significant chunk of change, and it may be the Burrow Herbert, and it may be less than that, but whatever. What's the plan to protect a guy who's almost retired already because of concussion issues? When you've invested in a right tackle who's just about average, you are letting your right guard, who's clearly been the better player of the two of them on that right side, go. There are question marks at center. There are question marks at left guard. And the guy that you are talking about kind of loosely bringing back was injured for most of the season and has historically been injured every season. And your left tackle is only going to play half a season anyway, and he might retire. And if he does retire or he gets hurt, what's the plan? Oh, and by the way, you've only got two picks and not a lot of cash.
Yeah. They're going to have to somehow turn those two picks into more. And they're going to have to spend some free agent dollars on an offensive lineman at this rate, because they're just not getting enough guys back in the cupboard. 100%. They can like Keon Smith and Ryan Hayes as much as anybody else, but those are developmental players and or backups, at least for now. I don't think you're going to thrust a Keon Smith into the starting spot. I disagree with you, by the way, on like I think he should get a dollar more than Justin Herbert. Now that they paid him what they paid him, that is what it is.
I mean, I don't think he's done. I just don't think that that's a. Yeah. I don't think that's a. You know, Herbert. There are. Look, we're not going to get down this path of Herbert versus Tua, but you know. Yeah, I just don't agree that he should be paying Tua that money. And I think if we took off our blindfold, not our blindfolds, our slightly rose-tinted glasses, we would see that paying him 50 million plus a year and paying him 276 million over however many years is crazy. It's crazy. I would make him play out the fifth year to see if he can, you know, be the guy. He's close to being the guy, but he's got to win the big games. He's got to. It's, you know, it's all well and good. He's a great guy. We all want him to succeed, but fucking win a game. Win a big game when it matters, in down the stretch, in the cold, on the road, in the playoffs. Stop collapsing at the end of the year. And I know there are extenuating circumstances in terms of injuries on the offensive line, which you just talked about, injuries at receiver, all of those things. Yeah, there's a whole great big, you know, melting pot of stuff going on, but other quarterbacks cope. Patrick Mahomes copes, Josh Allen copes, you know, Joe Burrow copes. These guys cope, you know, so we've got to cope. And all of a sudden coming up on the rails is a whole bunch of young quarterbacks, CJ Stroud. Here comes CJ Stroud. Here comes Jordan Love. You know, here come these guys. We're about to see three more at least, you know, in the top part of the draft, maybe five in the first round. You know, maybe six in the first round, but certainly three right at the top of the draft that potentially, you know, could come in and start very quickly. And, you know, so I just don't see the benefit. And I think that the deal will get pilloried, and I find it hard to defend.
I think he's going to get it. Yeah, I think he's going to get somewhere around. I think the Spotrac number is absolutely spot on. I think that's the number he's getting. That 205 for four, I think that's happening with like 155, 160 guaranteed, which puts him right in line with Justin Herbert and slightly in line with Burrow, but below him. I think that that's his number, and I think that's where they'll finally meet. And they'll save about $15 million on the first year, which they're going to have to use to try to keep some of these guys or try to get offensive linemen in here. Yeah. But that's a debate for another day, probably when he signs that deal next week. Okay. And we'll have Chris here to battle it out. But we're going to go to break here. When we come back, we're going to talk combine. Kind of interesting day today. Everybody I like is really short, Simon, on day one. So we will do that when we come back. But first, these words.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge, and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so premier kitchen, bath, and laundry cabinetry, countertops, and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or, do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at WCUFL.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 5-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
All right, and we're back. Brief schedule. Of course, today is defensive linemen, linebackers. Friday is defensive backs, tight ends. Saturday is the day that everybody's going to tune in. That's going to be a big number on NFL Network. That's quarterbacks, wide receivers, and running backs. And Sunday is dedicated to the offensive linemen. But today, it was a defensive lineman. My three stars of the day were none of the edge rushers. We kind of expected some of these guys were going to be really, really good. And, you know, that Chop Robinson blew everybody away athletically. That was kind of expected, I would say. But, man, the three guys that, man, they just look good. Like, those were good-looking workouts, in my opinion, were Byron Murphy, Braden Fisk, who, my God, like, he said he was going to do everything, and then he wanted to run the table on everything. I believe he did. I think he scored the highest out of everybody in almost every single drill and 40 time that he ran, and every single measured drill. And the last guy, Mekhi Wingo, I thought looked really good. Now, here's the issue. I'm not sure that any of the three fit in this system with Anthony Weaver. What do you think of the three players? First of all, what you thought of them today? I thought they were fabulous. But what did you think of them today, and how is their fit for Miami, and especially in this defensive system? If we're assuming that what Anthony Weaver means is the truth, which is he's adopting what the Ravens did last year.
Yeah, I mean, what is the defensive system? I mean, Fisk is an interesting one because, yeah, this was an offensive lineman in high school. He moved to defense when he went to Western Michigan. He got better and better each year, transferred to Florida State for his final season, and then just absolutely blew up. You know, kind of relentless motor, as we saw today at the combine. You know, moves so well for his size, gets off blocks well, runs the football. He was insane in the ACC Championship game against Louisville. I thought he was unbelievable in that game. And just, you know, just the whole season took his game to another level. He kind of, you know, everything he did today at the combine was great. But on his tape, you know, you see vertical displacement off the snap, his get off, his raw power, his motor just never shuts down. Great closing speed. And you look at a guy at 6'3", 295 pounds and think, you know, in this system, he's probably not going to play inside, but he's got that ability to, you know, to play inside outside in a Weaver front, you know, big guys on the line, you know, big interior defensive lineman, so he's not going to be a every down interior defensive lineman, but you could see him as a big, you know, defensive end in terms of what they might want to do. Mekhi Wingo again, 6'1", 297. Interesting guy. I think he's kind of slightly under the radar a lot. You know, people talk about LSU, people talk about Mason Smith, who is the amazing athlete, hugely recruited defensive tackle who tore his ACL in 2022 after all the mega hype, only 8 snaps, tore his ACL, and then sort of has worked his way back this year. And then who was the third guy you said?
Oh, Byron, my number one star of the day, Byron Murphy.
Yeah, Byron Murphy. I mean, just, you know, you watch Texas, especially down the stretch in terms of, you know, what he was able to do and his quickness off the snap, I thought was outstanding. It's just that great interior quickness. And also the thing about Murphy that you've got to remember, which is going to be absolutely key, and I think which is just another box reason why he will go early, is that he's only 20. He'll only just be 20 week one of 2024 NFL season. You know, so you look at 20, even on a 5-year deal, you know, he's only going to be coming into his prime towards the end of that first deal, and he could be a monster at that point. So, you know, he's a potential 3 contract player in terms of what he can deliver. So, yeah, just the quickness, the movement skills, the balance that he had. He just operated at a level that was different to everybody else apart from Fisk, really.
Yeah, and for those that have the size concerns, and my only concern is really the height, but those who have size concerns, Aaron Donald was considered miniature for when he was coming out of Pitt. So I would caution against that. I do see his fit because he's just such a good football player. You find a way to fit him in. If Anthony Weaver comes into my coach's meeting and says, I don't know where I can play him, it's time to fire Anthony Weaver, Simon, right? Like, he's a special guy. Like, Byron Murphy is... like, I think he's a first-round talent, but I think he reminds me some of Kalijah Clancy, but much, much better. He's the guy that you just fit around. You got to find a spot to play him. And if he likes rushing 3-tech, you gotta set up your defense to have a consistent 3-tech out there. I like him. I thought he moved up. You're just looking at him, you know, just a simple, you know, first impression that he gave on the field today. Like that was big, I thought.
The interesting thing about the Texas guys, though, because you've got Murphy, who's the stud, but T'Vondre Sweat is the big, you know, the big oak, the big people mover, 6'4", 362, ran a 5.27, but, you know, I mean, he's 362 pounds. But in terms of, you know, the makeup and what they're looking for, Sweat is more likely to be a Miami Dolphin than Murphy. Do you know what I mean? Because they just like those big space eaters who can eat up people inside, who can just, you know, the big oaks that can hold up against the run and free up linebackers, to, you know, and safeties to make plays. And you saw that with Patrick Queen. You saw that with Roquan Smith. You saw that with Kyle Hamilton, you know, in terms of, and we've seen it historically with guys like Chuck Clark, who ironically is a free agent, and wouldn't surprise me if Chuck Clark ended up as a Dolphin this year. But, you know, that's what they like to do. So actually, if you look at the two Texas guys, whilst Murphy, to me, is the standout, Sweat, also a very good player and great strength. We saw some of the leverage battles that he won at the Senior Bowl in terms of, you know, absolutely ruining a couple of the centers, especially the kid from Kentucky. And, you know, you just he's more likely to me as a Dolphin than Murphy would be.
Yeah, on Sweat, any red flags, and I think we can move on after this, any red flags that he didn't weigh himself at the Senior Bowl? He looked absolutely massive.
And yeah,
presumably he's in shape, quote unquote, in shape for this, and he showed up at 366 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, are there red flags? I suppose there must be, because, you know, what you're hiding, were you in the 370s? You'd probably like to get him in and him be in the 340s, but is it realistic that he's going to lose 20 pounds? He might do if he goes to a Florida team. But, you know, I haven't dug into his background yet because I haven't got to DTs in detail. But, you know, is there a history of weight issues there? I don't know at this stage. You know, is there a eating history? Is there, you know, why is he 362 or 368 or whatever he was? You know, why is he not in the 340s? Is that just a, you know, what are his family like in terms of, you know, is his dad a big man? Those are the things I'd be digging into as well if I was a scout, you know, because if his dad's 5'10", 190 pounds, then I'm asking a lot of questions.
All right, moving on. Friday is going to see defensive backs and tight ends. Of the tight ends, we've been like going back and forth on OnlyFans about all of these guys. A guy who hasn't gotten a lot of talk, really. And a lot of people are going to, although he played a lot of national games, a lot of people saw him play. But a lot of people want to get a good look at what he looks like because he's rumored to run pretty fast at a pretty good size. And that's Cade Stover from Ohio State. Ideal size. He's expected to run lower than 4.6. That's going to open eyes. People want to see him out in patterns to see what he actually looks like as an athlete. He's the one who could make himself the most money, right? Of what is considered the top five-ish.
You make the most
if we include Sinnott and Theo Johnson in there, Sanders, considering that, let's just say that for argument's sake, Bowers and Sanders are the lock, 1 and 2. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have Bowers, Sinnott, Sanders as my top three in Bowers first. And then I do like Sinnott. I think he's a very interesting player. And I think teams will like him because he's clean. You know, he's incredibly versatile, hugely translatable skill set, comes out of a pro scheme. I think, you know, he was excellent at the Senior Bowl. He was physical in the run game. He was the most difficult tight end to cover one-on-one in passing drills. He's very fluid as a mover. Yeah, good route, trade craft. I think, you know, he just looks like a modern-day tight end. Sanders, obviously, you know, physically jacked up, but only 3 years of experience at tight end. Another guy who'll only just turned 21 just before the draft, but, you know, he's big, he's smooth, he's hugely athletic, he's got great hands, but he isn't a blocker. You know, this is not a Y tight end. Sinnott is a Y. Sanders will not be a Y. And what I think is interesting about Sanders, you turn on the tape, and I watched four of his games in full in the off season. I watched a number of Texas games last season, but isolation four with him. And the first three plays against Oklahoma, literally the first three plays on offense, are, you know, this is what teams will be contending with, because play one is he motions across and just completely whiffs on a corner in space and falls over. Play two, a 3-by-1 formation, two blockers ahead of the receiver, and he absolutely gets blown up and pancaked backwards down the line. Pancaked into the receiver by a corner. And then play three, he blocks in line as the Y and just gets pancaked backwards on his ass and into his own running back. And you're just like, you know, this is what teams are going to have to contend with. But, you know, let's not focus on what he can't do. Let's focus on what he can do, which is, you know, he has got excellent hands. He is a very good route runner, and he is a, you know, he's an explosive athlete. Those would be the three guys. I think Stover then comes in probably after that. But again, look, this is a late convert to the position. He was starting at linebacker in the 2021 Rose Bowl against Utah for Ohio State. So he's not been a tight end for very long, but he is tough. He's more athletic than you give him credit for, and he catches everything. He's unafraid of the dirty work. He can move people in line. I like him. He's a good player. And the hardest part of selling a tight end to a GM from a scout's perspective is how they block, and he can block. You know, he can do it. He will fight and scrap, and he's got good grip strength, good power, can move big men off their spots. So yeah, I like him. He's an interesting guy. I mean, there's a few guys that it's an interesting tight end class, because then you go down like Jaheim Bell at Florida State, who's like Sanders really, and in the right offense, of which Miami I think is a right offense for Jaheim Bell, he could be a really good player. A guy both you and I like, AJ Barner, transfer from Indiana, who probably did less with more at Michigan in terms of he was asked to do something slightly different. At Indiana, he was just busting seams and playing out wide, playing as an X, you know, and they would just had him flexed wide the whole time. Whereas here at Michigan, he was much more of a traditional Y. You touched on Theo Johnson, who's an interesting guy. The guy I saw last night, you know, multiple games last night, was a kid from Sacramento State, Marshall Martin. He's 6'2", he's 230 pounds. He's essentially the FCS Jatavion Sanders or the FCS Jaheim Bell, so Swiss Army knife, was a running back, recruited as a running back. And when he has the ball in his hands, he becomes a running back. You know, he goes full on sort of Jerome Bettis, full on sort of Debo Samuel in terms of, you know, running over people, running around people, running through people. He's got speed. He's got burst. You know, 21 miles an hour on GPS this year. Great hands, quarterback friendly, heavy volume targets. I like this guy a lot. And he missed most of last year because he just, well, he didn't miss, he played through injuries just the whole year, but was kind of nagging injuries, couldn't really get going. But the year before, two, in fact, the last 2 years, he was an FCS All-American. Interesting guy. Can block as well, even though he's undersized. He can block, certainly block. You know, he's never going to be a Y in line, but, you know, this is a guy who can handle second and third level defenders. Good technique, ability to move people around. To me, he's a rock solid pick, and you know, I think he'd be a good player. And then you go down, yeah, another guy you and I both like, Tanner McLaughlin of Arizona, Eric Hall of Iowa, was a Michigan guy, and then you're down to the Holkers, Jared Wiley, who some people are high on. I just didn't really see it. McCallum Castles, Chris's guy, Tip Ryman, Brevin Spanford, you know, Trey Knox of South Carolina's converted wide receiver, and on and on and on. So it's an interesting tight end group, but you know. I'm going to be fascinated to see where Brock Bowers ends up. And I do think if the Dolphins had a third and a fourth round pick, and if, you know, I'm sure Mike McDaniel could scheme an awful lot for Bowers in this offense. But to me, he's always trying to find George Kittle, because that's the thing that absolutely made the run game tick in San Francisco. Plus he's a great receiver. So is there a George Kittle in this draft? And that's a question that remains to be answered.
Yeah. By the way, Peyton Wilson just made a pile of money.
I mean, yeah.
We'll get to him in a second. Moving on to
he's
defensive
a hell of a
backs.
Player.
Yeah. Yeah. I like him.
11 surgeries, though.
Yes. That's a problem. Moving on to defensive backs. If, you know, if I was ever to do a blog about, you know, scouting cornerbacks, I would call it Searching for Aqib Talib. Because that's been my, I think I mentioned this every single year we've been doing this podcast. So I'll mention it for the seventh consecutive year. He is my favorite cornerback prospect of all time. And I compare everybody with Aqib Talib. The last guy I compared him with Aqib Talib was Trevon Diggs. I guess it kind of worked out. He's pretty good, although he had a pretty bad injury. I found my Aqib Talib, Simon. What do you say to TJ Tampa at number 55?
Yeah, I mean, I like the player. I've talked about him on this podcast before, in terms of a guy that, you know, I think at the top of the, you know, the very top of the cornerback field, you've got, you know, Terron Arnold, who was great on the, you know, great at the podium today. You got Nate Wiggins at Clemson, who's long and fast and sudden and redirects quickly. You got Kool-Aid McKinstry, obviously played opposite Arnold, you know, twitchy, foot speed, gets his hands on a lot of balls, 21 passes defense across his career. Quinion Mitchell, sort of from Toledo, who was dominant at the Senior Bowl, was the guy that receivers just said, look, he's just really difficult to play against. And then, you know, you go down, you've got Cooper DeJean, you know, Mel Kiper had him at 9 in his mock, you know, fractured his toe, broke his tibia earlier in the season. But, you know, he started a cornerback, he started a safety, he started a nickel, he started a linebacker. He's this weapon that can play all over, run defender, coverage guy, athletic, really tough, versatile. Probably the best run defending DB in all of college football. Sticky coverage, more in zone than in man cover 3. You know, he's a good player. But Tampa, I like, you know, a lot of translational traits. Yeah, he's got good size, good length, long arms, great speed, lower body twitch, lower body explosion. You know, his family is a basketball family, so, you know, unsurprising that he's twitchy and explosive in the lower half. But he's instinctive, plays a lot of zone, instinctive in zone, physical, downhill against the run. I saw Jim Nagy talking about him a few months ago and on a podcast, and said, you know, this is a guy that scouts are phoning him up and saying, you know, anywhere between the second and the fourth round. But, you know, athletic corners with 33-inch arms and ball skills usually don't last too long on draft weekend. And, you know, I like him. He's a good player.
Yeah. And I think Cam Kitchens is going to run great. UM guys always run great. He's going to run sub 4-5, and he's going to draw eyes as far as one of the top safeties in the draft, and probably a candidate, I would say, at 55.
Yeah. Missed more tackles than I think he'll go before 55, but missed more tackles than I expected him to.
And does have some bad tape.
Instinctive tape. I don't think he might run fast. I don't necessarily think he's fast on film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, you know, he's a high post free safety. I think he's the best, you know, he's got absolute post range, ball skills, coverability, you know, keys quickly in the run game. But I just, there were some things that happened this year that, you know, and actually I think has he fallen behind Newbin? I think he probably has. You know, Newbin's got instinct and range for absolute days. I like the kid at USC, Kalen Bullock. You know, he's athletic, he's rangy. This is a, you know, a true center fielder, makes a lot of plays on the back end. The guy that the Dolphins spent, I'm told, spent a significant amount of time with over the last night, certainly. I think they had a meeting with last night and they've been showing a lot of interest in, is the kid from Washington State, Jaden Hicks from Washington State, who I think is, you know, another interesting player. And he went to Bishop Gorman. And it always makes me think about, yeah. You know what I'm thinking of, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Bishop Sycamore, that's the thing. But like he's played, like, he had 683 snaps in 2022 as a sophomore, 787 snaps on defense special teams in 2023, 64 tackles, 70 assists, 4 pass breakups, 2 picks, 3 sacks. You know, this is a kind of a strong, aggressive tackler, real kind of run, you know, hustle player. Tracks the ball well. He's quick. He's bursty in zone coverage. He's an interesting player. And this is a guy that the Dolphins are, you know, they're clearly, you know, if we are adopting the Weaver, Baltimore, you know, defense, that's oftentimes 3 safeties. So, you know, and Brandon Jones is a free agent. Elijah Campbell's a free agent. You know, so safeties will need to come in.
All right, and that takes us to Saturday, sexy day, quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs. I'm going to start right here. Where is Jordan Travis in his rehab? Is he gonna work out this offseason or no?
I think it's unlikely.
Okay.
It's unlikely. I suspect he goes through everything that he can do from a mental side of things, and obviously, you know, they'll check and recheck at the hospital and those sorts of things, but I don't think he will. It feels like it'd probably be too soon.
Okay. What are his draft prospects? Because I absolutely love him to be a challenger for Skylar Thompson. You know,
I'm with you. I really like him. Again, somebody that improved, you know, in terms of his time at Florida State. I thought he got better and better and better as he played. I think he only had 2 picks all season last year. He's athletic. He's a great leader. Obviously, he played at Louisville. He's an older prospect, six-year guy. I think his brother went to Florida State as well. Mm-hmm. Kind of level-headed, mobile, can get outside the pocket, can throw on the run, doesn't have a big arm, but has more than enough arm strength. He's accurate. I think he's just a good guy, an interesting guy in terms of what he brings to the table. And he doesn't turn the ball over, you know, that's really important. He didn't turn the ball over with fumbles, certainly doesn't turn the ball over with picks. He's careful with the football, but not to the detriment of, you know, he's not check down Charlie. You know, he's enough size, you know, he's the same height as Caleb Williams. He's probably 15 pounds lighter. I think he's 6'1", 201, but yeah, he's certainly a draftable guy on day 3, regardless of the injury.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody's really going to make any money, but people want to get a good look of JJ McCarthy in that setting, I would say. He's the one who stands to make the most out of his combine experience, right? You agree?
Yeah, I mean, he is one of the most polarizing prospects in the entire draft, I think, in terms of, look, you know, Michigan...
I hate to interrupt you, but I've been hearing all this hype, and I've been looking at JJ McCarthy as... He's just a good college quarterback. I never saw him as a pro prospect, but all of a sudden, yeah, here he is. He's a pro prospect now all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the things that people kind of talk about, the numbers and all these sorts of things, look, Michigan are a very boring run-first team. Okay, they're very boring run-first team. College stats are extremely deceiving. You know, Michigan went 15-0. They blew out a large part of their schedule, a run-first team. So you have multiple things working against him from a statistical point of view. You know, Michigan didn't play much in the second half. So you have to view his film through that lens. And once you recognize that, I think you see a number of transferable traits for him, as well as, you know, obvious leadership and those sorts of things. He's tough. He's got quick feet. He's a good athlete. There weren't a lot of play. There weren't a lot of games at Michigan last year where he had to be the best player on the field for them to win. So he doesn't have a lot of that on his resume in terms of, and we've talked about that with Tua, picking him the team up and carrying him on his shoulders. I think teams have been a bit concerned about how thin he is in terms of the frame. And I think Albert Breer reported that somebody said to him, what was the quote? Something like a stretched out Bryce Young, something like that in terms of, but I think he's got very good downfield ball placement. I think he's a good athlete. He's pretty good off schedule. I do worry when I watch him on tape, and I think I just need to see more volume and more pressure volume in terms of carrying a team and how he handles this particular situation. But I don't believe he's a great diagnostics guy. And I don't think his mental clock is necessarily extremely refined. Do you know what I mean? So, I think Sharon Moore, who's now the head coach, but was the offensive coordinator, I thought he Moore did an awful lot with him to make the game easy, to make the game simple for him. But he is an interesting. He reminds me a lot of Jim Harbaugh as a quarterback prospect in many regards, just a bit more mobile. It'll be interesting to see where he ends up because he's clearly going to go in the first round. I don't see it. I've got to say, I don't see it.
Yeah, neither
But
do I. I'm rooting
Tommy,
for a New England trade down and picking him up.
I mean, look, it's going to be fascinating what happens with the quarterbacks. What's going to happen with Russell Wilson? I suspect Russell Wilson hits the market. What's going to happen with Justin Fields? Peter King had the report that. They thought that the Bears were going to trade. Now, there's some talk about Atlanta trading for him. That might take Atlanta out of the market for a McCarthy at seven or a, then what happens to guys like Bo Nix and Michael Penix and Spencer Rattler and, going on down Michael Pratt and, so it will be very interesting to see how it plays out. But I do think these kind of the These guys that are going to get released or traded, or, I think that will make things more interesting in terms of you're going to have a number of starting caliber quarterbacks hitting the free agent, the free agent market, and where they end up.
Yeah, not that we're going to spend too much time on the running backs, but we'll give you guys a good watch list for the position. I've already handed out the Kalen Ballage Award to Braylon Allen. He's going to dazzle people out there. And the more I look at him, he is Kalen Ballage, Simon. He is precisely Kalen Ballage. Big, giant, beautiful looking man that can catch the ball and looks great on tape. Anything that catches your eye as far as what could be, I don't know, a draft pick of opportunity. Not that they'll take one at 55. I think it's a fifth round thing if it's anything.
Yeah, I mean, I like obviously I like Benson. He's my number one back. I think he's explosive. He's burst. He's got long speed, make people miss, and he's got great size. He's 6'1", 223. So this is the kid that I really liked and just kept watching. And I have not seen anybody having this high. It's Jalen Wright of Tennessee. And this is a kid who's delivered average 6.7 yards per carry in the last 2 seasons in the SEC. He's got a home run hitter's mentality. I just 5'11", 210. He is a good player. He's a high school 55-meter state champion. A number of the highest forced tackle, a missed tackle rate in the SEC over the last 2 years. He is a legit speedster. Very good in pass protection, eyes in the right place, good hands. I like him a lot. I like Marshawn Lloyd, the kid from USC. I think he's got outstanding contact balance, great feet, light-footed cutter, legit juice. Estime of Notre Dame, big guy who I like. And then you get into kind of guys like Jonathan Brooks, who I didn't love, and then obviously had the ACL. Blake Corum, obviously, who's an interesting player and probably has the best lateral quickness in the draft. Reminds me a little bit of Chase Brown, the guy that I talked about last week, Mayan Williams of Ohio State. This is a guy that I really like. He's 5'9", he's 226. Deshaun Fennick at Oregon State, I really like. You got Will Shipley, who's kind of a Swiss Army knife tool. The kid Ray Davis at Kentucky, I mean, amazing story. He was homeless growing up for a lot of his time as a kid. He's speedy, he's elusive, he's an angle destroyer, he's got a real low center of gravity. He's like 5'8". He's kind of a DeAndre Swifty, Mark Ingram type, can run inside, outside. And then there's, you know, some guys that probably people don't know so much about. Imani Bailey at TCU, I like. Transferred from Louisiana Lafayette. He's kind of high energy, low center of gravity guy. Kimani Vidal of Troy, you know, kind of he's a poor man's Maurice Jones-Drew. Average 6 yards per 5.6 yards per carry in 2023, with a lot of those yards coming after contact. And then, you know, your guy, Braylon Allen, who I don't love. And then you got the third down backs. You got Blake Watson at Memphis, who I really like. You've got Dylan Lobby at New Hampshire, we talked about a little bit. The kid at Louisville, Jawar Jordan. So it's an interesting class, a really interesting class. But, you know, I certainly have Jalen Wright probably higher than almost anybody does. But I would not be afraid of picking Jalen Wright. If we had a third or a fourth round pick and you wanted to add a back, you know, that to me is a value. And it just ticks all the Mike McDaniel boxes of speed, can play on third downs because he can pass protect and he's got hands.
Yeah, I think, and this could be, I guess I'll take the last word on this. I think Blake Corum could be this year's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, where he's taken, I don't know, 31st. And all of a sudden everybody's like, whoa, where did that come from? And I'll remind them it happened already once before when the Chiefs took Clyde Edwards-Helaire, what was it, 32nd?
Yeah, although so, I would say, you know, what's happened to Clyde Edwards-Helaire would be a cautionary tale probably to
right.
to Corum, who I like, but I that would be too spicy for me on the end of round one. I think he is as clean a prospect as there is in the draft. I mean, the highest of high character and like absolute football junkie, you know, and just a really tough. But you know, is he an NFL starter, or is he like Mike Hart, you know, who's ironically now the running backs coach at Michigan? Is he that kind of guy? You know, he reminds me, I'll tell you who he reminds me of a little bit, is Aaron Jones of Green Bay. He's got that sort of, you know, he's tough, he's got great vision, he's got great hands, he's shifty, lateral movement. I think he's that kind of, you know, Aaron's not a burner or a kind of a bowling ball runner, but he's just, you know, he's bursty and he's got vision and he's got nice instincts. And
now, and people, and it's fresh in people's minds, the failures of past Michigan running backs, you know, Tyrone Wheatley, star Michigan running backs, Tyrone Wheatley, Tim Biakaputuka, you know, you mentioned Mike Hart. Yeah, it's fresh in a lot of minds, you know, how these guys tend to bust out. But all right, moving on to a position that I think Dolphins are absolutely marked for at 21. It's a distinct possibility, especially after Chris Greer said, look, you know, at 21, you know, we may take a guy that you may think we're stacked at. Well, where are they stacked? Well, they do have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, so it stands to reason you could say that they're pretty stacked at wide receiver. So I think 21, I think wide receivers at play at 21. What do the people want to see? What are our fans, our listeners want to see out of this wide receiver group? It's absolutely stacked, loaded.
Yeah, it's stacked, and it's also a fast group. I mean, there's about 15 guys who've run under 11 seconds in the 100 meters, state champions, all sorts of things. You know, you've got a guy like Roma Dunze who's run at 10.67, 100 meters. You've got guys who've run 10.55s. You know, you've got Ladd McConkey's run a 10.86. I think the Dolphins could get value in the second round at 55 with a player that you'd probably go in the first round normally. So maybe that's an Xavier Leggett or a, you know, a McConkey or a Troy Franklin or a Roman Wilson or a Jalen McMillan or a Jalen Polk or a Malachi Corley or a Ricky Pearsall or an Adonai Mitchell or, you know, Tez Walker, or, you know, the list goes on and on and on. Javon Baker is a guy that scouts really like. I mean, you go down the list. I mean, there's guys that you'll get, again, because the class is so good, you're going to get second round guys in the fourth round. You're going to get third round guys in the fifth round. You know, you look at someone like Jamari Thrash or Taj Washington at USC or Malik Washington at Virginia. You've got Marcus Rosemi Jackson at Georgia, who I really like. He's like, you know, just hasn't played a lot, but is a really good player. Jerry Rice's kid, Brendan Rice, you know, he runs a 10.77, 100 meters. You know, Mike McDaniel will have seen a lot of Anaiah Smith at Texas A&M because, you know, he's very similar to Devon Achane. He's just thicker, you know, same sort of size, 5'9", 191, but, you know, he's a perfect fit for a McVay, McDaniel, Shanahan, LaFleur kind of toy. So yeah, I mean, this class is really good. And then you go down, you still got like Jacob Cowing and Isaiah Williams at Illinois. And, you know, I mean, there's a kid at West Florida, John Giles, who's, you know, he's a Division II All-American. He was finalist for the Division II Heisman, the Harlan Hill Award. I mean, he bounced around a load of sort of community colleges. He sat out a year because his grades weren't good enough. But my God, you watch his tape and it's against small school stuff, but holy shit, this is man against boy stuff. This is kind of Randy Moss against kids kind of thing. You know, at worst, he's a priority free agent. You know, he's a beast, 6'3", he's 188. But he's out there mossing guys deep down the field. He's, you know, he can drop his hips, come back for the ball. He's just consistent separator. He can stack receivers. I mean, he made a catch against Florida A&M, which is as good as anything I've seen in this entire draft class, in this entire cycle. He is, he's an interesting player. So, yeah, I mean, you're just going to find receivers all over.
Yeah, and now we move on to Sunday, and that's the last day of the combine. They'll dedicate the entire day to the offensive linemen. Give the listeners a cheat sheet on this day. Who do they want to see? Because let's face it, college football fans are not, you know, tuning in on Saturday afternoon to see Amarius Mims play.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what do they want to see on Sunday?
Keep half an eye on Ola Fashanu because, you know, there are some people, and I've seen more and more mocks, and Mel Kiper had him at 14, more and more mocks of him dropping down a little bit. The right tackles, JC Latham, Tyler Guyton. I mean, there's a scout said to me that Tyler Guyton reminded him of Tyron Smith coming out of USC. You know, that's the ceiling. He's a right tackle, but he's going to take some time. You know, but keep an eye on him. Keep an eye on Jordan Morgan. Look out for his, when he weighs in, how long are his arms? You know, the rumor is they're 32.7 inches. You know, Troy Fatanu, the kid at Washington who we talk about, he's, you know, absolutely right in Miami's wheelhouse. And there's a couple of other players, you know, Kieran Amagaji of Yale. You know, McDaniel's going to be all over a Yale kid. Blake Fisher of Notre Dame, he's a right tackle, but a good player. There's a guy at Utah, Satoa Lemea, who's a former right guard. He's played last two seasons at right tackle. He'll probably go back to guard. He's an interesting guy. You know, then you look at the guards, you know, Graham Barton, you know, short arms, played left tackle. You go back and watch his tape against Jared Verse and Florida State. He's a technician, consistent, solid, lots of quality tape blocking on an island. He's very athletic. He's strong. He's got great grip strength. Yeah, he might be a center. He might be a guy who play all five positions. There's some interior guys that I like. Dominic Puni of Kansas is relentless, fast, precise player. He's a cousin of AJ Epenesa. So if, you know, Buffalo against Miami, there'd be an interesting matchup. The two Christians, Christian Haynes at UConn, Christian Mahogany at Boston College, they're interesting guys. And then, you know, you go down, Bucky Williams, a kid at Appalachian State who's 6'2", 298. He's not going to wow you with his size or his measurables, but there's strong play on tape, you know. Last two seasons, actually, he's physical. He's a mauler. And then you go down to the centers. Obviously, Jackson Powers-Johnson, who was dominant at the Senior Bowl, has only got 1 year, but does he go off the board earlier? The Rams looking for a new center. The Steelers looking for a new center. They both picked before us. Zach Frazier of West Virginia. He's 6'2". He's 314 pounds. He is an absolute nailed-on fit for this scheme. He is a zone center ad infinitum. This is a four-time state champion wrestler, you know, outstanding grip strength, you know, physicality, intelligence, was brilliant last year in 2023. He was the best center to me in college football last year. He broke his leg and right at the end of the season on the final drive against Baylor. You know, and this is a guy that instead of laying on the field with a broken leg, he literally sort of crawled slash limped off so the team wouldn't get a 10-second runoff when they were driving down to win the game. He is smart and tough and experienced, and he's quick, and he gets up at, like Tyler Linderbaum used to get out, you know, watch his take up on the outside shoulder of that interior DT. That's what he does. Hand replacement, anchor against power. He's a guy as well that, you know, let's say Miami trade down a little bit from 21 to the late 20s or the early day two, pick up, and, you know, let's say they get an extra second and a third or something to move down. you know, Zach Fraser would absolutely be in play, depending on what the plan is with Connor Williams. And then there's, you know, a guy Chris likes, Tanner Bortolini at Wisconsin, who's started at left guard, right guard, center, tight end, literally over the last 2 years. Started all 12 games at center last year. Inconsistent a little bit with shotgun snaps. There's a kid at Tulane, Sincere Hainsworth, yeah, 3,987 career snaps. You know, 4 years at center, 1 year at right guard, started, never missed a game, started every game since he's been there. Just a big guy, road grader, loves to hit, fundamentally sound, play all three positions, not physically dominant traits wise, but, you know, Bo Limmer, Arkansas, he was the guy that got absolutely shit canned by Tavondre Smith at the Senior Bowl, but he can play. Matthew Lee, a guy you like at the U, he's a little bit on the sides, 288, but again, you know, he's an interesting player as well. There's a kid at South Dakota State, Mason McCormick, you know, was excellent at the Shrine Bowl. Good hand strength, solid anchor, 6'4", 310. So, yeah, I mean, there's some good centers, some good day three centers. You can come in, compete, back up, play for guard, and just churn the bottom of that roster and that offensive line room.
Yeah, on the way out, one thing I think you could clear up for the people, because I think you have a really good answer on this, because you told me this one time. Matt Lee, I posted his PFF score, his production score. He's number one out of all the center prospects. JPJ is number two. One thing I could tell you about Matt Lee, he only played 1 year at the U this past year, played every snap. He's a fabulous football player. Like, what a season he had. If, I guess, you know, there's some websites that have him in the top 10. Others have him as high as seventh as far as centers, which puts him as a day three prospect. How do you reconcile that? What is hurting Matt Lee? He's an older type because he's a transfer. What's holding it? Because what's holding him back from getting more highly touted into day two? Because there's nothing wrong with his tape, his last year at the University of Miami.
Yeah, I think I think he plays high and it's coachable, but I think he loses leverage battles. I think he needs to get stronger. I think he gets a little bit overpowered in the run game. I think he comes off the ball high. He loses the leverage battle, like I said. He often feels like an effort player rather than a fundamentally sound technique player at the point. You know, and what I love to see with linemen, you know, when, you know, you're obviously trying to lock out and move, but if you can't lock out and move, your hand displacement, you know, it is so key, it's so critical. You've got to have fast hands. You know, that's why so many offensive linemen box and you see them, you know, boxing and those sorts of things, because it's, you know, you get your hand knocked away. Can I get my hand back inside on the breastplate and, you know, continue to steer? And I don't think he's great at that. You know, I do think he's got good hands, but I just don't see it consistently enough, I think. And that's the issue for me. But I wouldn't surprise me if he ends up as a Dolphin. You know, he ends up getting picked in he's like a sixth round Miami Dolphin pick.
Yeah. Yeah. I love him. Like in the sixth round, I'm looking at him as one of my BPAs for the sixth round. And as a UDFA, he would be a priority guy for me.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, we're going to end it right here. Enjoy the combine this weekend. Next week, we're going to be free agency intensive because we will be essentially a week away from all hell breaking loose and a bunch of new Dolphins. Or maybe the same ones coming back. Not all of them, but some. All right, we will talk to you again on Monday.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.